Ragnar fan är med oss. And as promised, I'm going to provide a complete classification of the orthogonal polynomials, finish up our discussion of the generalized Rodriguez formula. And then for the second part of the lecture, I'll discuss their relation to differential equations, how in practice you can know when you need to use an orthogonal polynomial, and the relation of orthogonal polynomials to Sturm-Liouville theory. Okay, so let me just remind you of where we left off yesterday. So I had motivated the form of the generalized Rodriguez formula. Pn of x is equal to some normalization constant over a weight times dn, dx to the n, of the weight times a function s to the n, where s of n, so s of x was equal to x minus a, x minus b, if a and b are finite, x minus a, or x minus b, if only one was finite. And this one is if b is finite and a is minus infinity, and just a constant if both were infinite. Okay, so that's where we left off yesterday, but I showed you that these were orthogonal as long as W satisfied certain properties. And those properties were that W had to be finite and differentiable. So these are orthogonal. Last time we showed that the inner product of Pn and Pm with respect to weight W was equal to just delta nm, if we choose these cn's appropriately. If we choose them differently, we could get some constant here. But they're, regardless of how we choose these, they're orthogonal. If n is not equal to n, this inner product is 0. So this was true as long as w satisfied a few properties. So w had to be finite and differentiable. It also had to vanish at the boundaries. So if A or B was finite, then we needed W of A times S of A to be equal to 0, or W of B times S of B to be 0, if A or B was finite. And in the infinite case, well, the property we needed was that W of X, S of X, basically to the n, had to go to 0 as X went to the infinite boundary. Or equivalently, W of X times S of X had to go to 0 faster than any polynomial. As x went to plus or minus infinity if a or b was infinite. Okay. Any questions on what we did so far? Yes. So that means, what I mean by this last condition is that W of x, s of x, has to be less than, say, a constant times x to the n for x large enough, for x greater than some x naught. So you can find an x naught for any n. So x naught, which depends on, might be a function of n. For any n. So this is the if we want to check the plus infinity boundary condition, then if we take x large enough, we need this expression. So if we choose some negative number here, we want this to be smaller than, say, a over some positive power of x, as long as we get sufficiently large x. And I think we just switch the sign here if it's the negative boundary condition. Basically, yes. In practice, that's what we're going to find. Okay. Any other questions? Good. Okay. So I've shown these are orthogonal if these conditions are satisfied. So when are these polynomials? So that's what we want to find out. So I claim there are only three cases we need to check. So the three cases. Case one, when a and b are equal to minus infinity and infinity. Case two, when a and b are equal to 0 and infinity. And case three, when a and b are equal to minus 1, 1. So a and b are any other real numbers, then we can always just perform a linear transformation, and Pn of Cx plus D will then be a orthogonal polynomial on one of these ranges. So if we just perform a linear transformation, we can map any other range to one of these ranges, and so these are really the only three interesting cases. Okay, so let's look at each of these in turn and see what the possible weights are that satisfy our conditions up there and will give us a polynomial. So let's look at the simplest case first, which is the infinite case. So if a and b are minus infinity and infinity, we don't have to make a linear transformation to map our original range onto one of these three cases. So we still have some freedom left, and we can use that freedom to pick what we want P1 to be. So let's make the choice, make a linear transformation. So that P1 of x is plus or minus 2x. Okay. And so then we need, P1 from our formula on the top board, the generalized Rodriguez formula, is just 1 over w times dw dx. Because in the infinite case, s is just a constant. It's proportional to this. So this has to equal plus or minus 2x. Okay, so this is a Very simple differential equation that we can solve to get that W is proportional to the exponential of plus or minus x squared. Okay. So now we need to check that this satisfies our boundary conditions. So in particular, we need this to go to zero faster than any polynomial as we go to plus or minus infinity. And clearly, the positive sign doesn't work. So we're left with just this negative sign. And so there's only one choice of weight that gives us orthogonal polynomials on the real numbers. And that's W is equal to some constant times e to the minus x squared. We can always just choose that constant to be 1. So we'll just exponential of minus x squared. And so this means that the orthogonal polynomials on the real numbers is just some constant times e to the minus x squared times the nth derivative of e to the minus x squared. And you may recognize x squared, thank you. Yes. So you may recognize this as the, we make the choice, Cn is equal to minus 1 to the n. This is, in fact, just the Hermite polynomials. So these are the unique orthogonal polynomials on the real numbers. Okay. So the next case is the semi-infinite case. AB is equal to 0 infinity. And in this case, we don't have the freedom to make a linear transformation. So P1 of x, which is 1 over W times dWx dx, is some general linear polynomial. Okay, and so S is just x in this case, because B is infinite and A is finite, and it's just 0. So again, we can solve this differential equation. It's not quite as simple as the first one, but simple enough. And it's just W prime over W x plus 1 equal to AX plus B, or log of W equal to AX plus B minus 1 log X C, or W is equal to C times E to the AX times X to the B minus 1. Okay. So now we need to check that this W satisfies our boundary conditions. Okay, so so we need that this vanishes faster than the polynomial at infinity. So that implies that the boundary condition at infinity implies that A is negative. And we also need it to go to 0 at x equals 0. That's our other boundary condition. And that just implies that B is positive. B is greater than 0. because a boundary condition at, at zero is that W times X has to be equal to zero at zero. If B is between 0 and 1, so we are, this is, let me write this out. This is W of X times X. So our boundary condition is not just that W has to go to 0, it's that W times S has to go to 0. That's why it's 0 and not 1. Thanks. Okay, so this implies that the weight has to be just this form, e to the minus x. And it's, you can just make a change of variables. It's typically defined this way, where rho is greater than 0. So this gives us the orthogonal polynomials on the semi-infinite. And the Rodriguez formula, in this case, is just c to the n, e to the x, x to the minus rho, x to the n plus rho. And with the choice that cn is equal to 1 over n factorial, these are just the associated Laguerre polynomials. Of which the Laguerre are a special case. So these are again the only orthogonal polynomials on a semi-infinite range. Well, up to normalization. So this is the standard normalization. You can always define your own normalization if you like, but it's really just convention. So the conventional normalization usually makes some property of them nice. It's usually not the none of these. Standard normalizations make the inner product equal to 1, so they're not orthonormal.
How do you assume that, say, A has to be less than 0 to the power of minus 1? And to have a formula, we should have A minus 2.
Okay, so A is minus 2. Right, then we could just make a change of variables and get rid of that. So again, this is up to a linear transformation. Okay. So our final case is the finite case. And again, we need our first orthogonal function, which in this case is 1 over w times e dx of w of x times x squared minus 1 to be equal to the linear polynomial. And so again, we derive a differential equation here, which is a little bit more complicated than the previous case, so I won't go through it in the board, but you can check that w of x is equal to 1 minus x to the alpha times x plus 1 to the beta solves this differential equation where alpha is equal to 1/2 a plus b minus 2, and beta is equal to 1 half a minus b minus 2. So you can check this. Okay. So then all that's left to do is check our boundary conditions. So in this case, since we have finite range, we just need W times S to be 0 at plus and minus 1. Okay, so our boundary conditions then are that W of X times X squared minus 1 is equal to 0 at X equals plus or minus 1. And that implies then that alpha and beta are both greater than minus 1. We get one extra factor of x plus 1, one extra factor of x minus 1 here. Good. Okay, so that then gives us the final set of orthogonal polynomials, normalization constant, 1 minus x to the minus alpha, 1 minus x to the minus beta, minus x to the alpha, x plus 1 to the alpha, x squared minus 1. Yeah. And with the normalization, cn minus 1 to the n over 2 to the n, n factorial, these are what are known as the Jacobi polynomials. Of which, yes, thank you. It should be there. Four, thank you. Okay, so these are the Jacobi polynomials, of which most of the other, or all of the other orthogonal polynomials are special cases, particularly the Gendre polynomials are the case where alpha and beta are both equal to 0. So you may remember that formula from your tutorial last week. Okay, so these are all of the orthogonal polynomials. Any questions on so far? For general n, good. So what we've shown is that the first one is a polynomial. So if the first one is a polynomial, then we can look at the second one compared to the first one. So P2 of X then is 1 over W, or proportional to 1 over W times the second derivative of W S squared. And so if we write this out, this is just okay, so we'll get a bunch of terms. So it'd be useful to write this as WS times S. We'll keep this factor together. And so if we then take derivatives here, we'll get this times WS prime S plus WS times S prime. And this gives us WS double prime times S plus WS prime S prime. We also get another one of those from here, and WS times S double prime. Okay, so we know from the fact that P1 of X is equal to a polynomial is that W S prime over W is equal to a polynomial, and S is a polynomial. So this term gives us a polynomial. We also know that, so this term, the W's cancel out. S is a polynomial, so this term is also a polynomial. And this is can just be related to the derivative of the first one. So this one will also give us a polynomial. And you can generalize this and show by induction that they'll all be polynomials. So that's roughly why it has to be the case. Does that answer your question? Okay. All right, so all we need to check is that the first one is a polynomial. Okay. So now we know all the orthogonal polynomials. Yes. Have to have
B bigger than
0. B? Yes. From so okay, so our condition here is that we need W of X times X. S is just X in this case. This has to be 0 when we evaluate this at X equals 0. So when we evaluate this at 0, this term is just 1. And here we get an X to the B has to be equal to 0 at X equals 0. And so that's true as long as B is greater than 0. Rho is B, right? So. Rho is B minus 1, yep. So B, okay. Sorry, yes, thank you, that's a mistake. It should have been greater than minus 1. Thank you. Okay. So when how do we know when to use these polynomials? So the most likely place that you'll run across these polynomials in physics is as solutions to differential equations. So it'd be great if we could just look at a differential equation and tell when its solution is one of these polynomials. And I'll spend the next part of the lecture showing you how to do that. And so to do that, we'll look at theory of differential equations developed by Sturm and Liouville. I think that's correct spelling. Okay. So Sturm and Liouville looked at second-order differential equations with variable coefficients. So the problem that they examined is this problem here. Okay. So here, these are variable coefficients, and just a very general second order differential equation. So I'd like to rewrite this in a different form. So I want to rewrite this as some differential operator, U omega, acting on a particular solution. So there may be many solutions to this. Let's just index our solutions by with a subscript lambda, plus lambda times some function times U lambda of x equals 0. So we can always rewrite this equation in this form. And to see that, we can just explicitly calculate what omega has to be. So if we write d dx acting on f of x, d dx plus g of x, so this is some differential operator, and act with that on u of x, and so if we write it, sorry, I believe this is an h. So if we write it in this form, we can see that this is equivalent to the top line if we just make some choices here. So we need f of x to be equal to a of x. So then when this derivative x, these two derivatives x and the u, we just get this term. And we also can let g of x equal b of x, but we need to subtract off the term when this derivative of x on f. So minus a prime. And likewise for the last one, just 1 over lambda times the c of x. We need to subtract off the parts when these derivatives act on these functions. So minus prime of x plus a double prime of x. Okay, so these are equivalent, and it's just going to be more convenient to write this equation in terms of a single differential operator acting on it and basically giving back the same function times some other function. Yes? Yes. Let me write this. Let me use H for now. Okay. So we have this general differential equation, and we want to know, first of all, when the solutions are going to be orthogonal. So let's take a look and see if we can figure that out.
How do you get the a double prime term?
A double prime term here. So that of f, let's see. So from the g, it's from the g. When this derivative acts on the g, we hit this term, which we needed to cancel off the derivative on the f. Yes. Okay. So, looking for orthogonal solutions to this equation. So, let's take a solution to this equation and multiply it by another solution and then integrate. So if we do that, we get u lambda prime times omega acting on u lambda dx, and that's equal to minus lambda times the integral from a to b u lambda prime u lambda times h dx. And we can do the same thing. So assuming here both u lambda prime and u lambda are solutions. So if we multiply differential equation for u lambda by u lambda prime by u lambda, we can get a very similar equation, just with the prime switched. And if we then subtract these two equations, we get that the integral from a to b, u lambda prime, omega u lambda, minus omega u lambda prime, u lambda, dx is equal to lambda minus lambda prime. This integral over here is the same for both terms. Okay, and so what does this equation tell us? So in particular, we want different solutions to be orthogonal. That means, so if we look at the last term up there, we see that that is basically just the inner product of u lambda prime with u lambda with respect to some weight function h. So that means that so u lambda prime with respect to some weight h is it's going to be orthogonal for lambda not equal to lambda prime. If the left-hand side vanishes. And so that the left-hand side vanishing is just a statement that u lambda inner product with omega u lambda prime with respect to the L2 norm is, or L2 inner product is equal to u lambda u omega u lambda with omega u lambda prime. And so this is the condition that omega is self-adjoint or Hermitian. And so if this is the case, then our solutions are orthogonal. Okay, and so let's look at for which omegas that's going to be the case. And to do that, it's going to be useful to recast this omega yet again. And so if we write omega as d dx times s of x d dx of u of x plus t of x u of x. Sorry, without the u's, just the operator plus t of x. So we just want to write it in this form. And if we compare this to this, we see that the difference is we don't want this g. So our functions are related to the previous functions in a very similar way. It's just we don't have that term. So then we have to have this. These equations to relate to our original equations. And so this may seem like it's more restrictive, but we can always multiply our entire equation by a function to try to recast it in this form. And that's possible in most cases, as long as it's not too singular. Yes? How did I go to this? This expression here? So I'm just, for now, assuming, I'm just saying I want to look at the class of omegas where I can recast it into this form. So it's going to be easier to check which ones are Hermitian if it's in this form. I'm going to show you that actually if it is in this form, I'll show you if it's in this form when it's Hermitian. And as long as these functions are not too singular, we can recast it in this form. Because if, for instance, we don't have that b is the derivative of a, we can just multiply our equation here by some other function. And say we can multiply this by some function d of x. And it will usually be possible to find some d of x so that we can satisfy this. Okay, so when are these omegas Hermitian? So let's just start with the integral from a to b of u lambda prime omega acting on u lambda, and integrate by parts a few times to get this in terms of get the omega to act on the other operator. So we can write this as, if we integrate by parts to get this first derivative, acting on that, we get integral from a to b, ddx, u lambda prime, times s, ddx, so this is acting here. And this is still acting on the original u lambda dx. Plus, we have a boundary term. And I didn't touch the last term, the t term. So that just goes along for the ride. Okay. And then we can integrate by parts one more time to put this derivative on s times this. And we get ddx acting on s ddx, all acting on u lambda prime times u lambda dx. We get a new boundary term. B. we still have these two terms. Okay, so this first term plus this last term is just the integral from a to b of omega acting on u lambda prime multiplied by u lambda. And then we have these two boundary terms. Minus this. Okay. So it's Hermitian if this expression here is 0. I want this to be equal to 0. So that means if we have an operator of this form, and u lambda prime s ddx u lambda ab is equal to the derivative of u lambda prime times s u lambda ab, that means that omega is Hermitian, and therefore the solutions are orthogonal. Yes.
When you define f of x, the lambda there, that would be the same lambda as the
as interacting. Yes. So that's some index that's it's labeling your solutions. It's going to be a real number. And so, for instance, if our solutions to this equation are one of the orthogonal polynomials, that lambda could be n. It's some label that labels the solutions, and it's you can think of it as an eigenvalue, basically. So when we act with omega on u lambda, we get back minus sign. Okay. We get back. Minus lambda w. So it's like an eigenvalue, but we have this weight function. Okay, so the last term.
Yeah.
This is T. Yes, I defined T up here. This is T. Why would it be a problem? This is U lambda prime times T times U lambda. So that when I relate it back to the original equation, yes. So T is fixed. This lambda will change. So it depends on the equation. There'll be usually a discrete set of lambdas that you'll get. We'll look at an example, and perhaps it'll be clearer in a minute. Okay.
So, how do you know from the bound?
boundary condition that the solutions are orthogonal?
Because this boundary conditions imply that the function is Hermitian. So we had that this was equal to this plus the boundary terms. So if those boundary terms are not there, then this lambda integrated against omega acting on u lambda prime is the same with if we switch the which solution omega is acting on. And that was, did I erase it already? Right, so if you look at the bottom line of this top board, so we've found that this different solutions are orthogonal if these are Hermitian. So that was our logic. So if this is the case, then it doesn't matter which solution we act with omega on. And if it doesn't matter which solution we act with omega on, then the left-hand side of the bottom equation on the top board is equal to 0. So that means that this inner product of u lambda prime with u lambda with respect to weight w vanishes regardless of what lambda and lambda prime are, or unless lambda equals lambda prime.
Excuse me. When we change lambda, which variables change and we do not change? T, does it change?
T does not change. When we change lambda, T and S and W do not change. The only thing that changes will be lambda, and that will mean you'll get a different solution. You'll have a different equation, and so you'll get a different solution.
So T doesn't change, W doesn't change, C and D, do they change?
C and, right, so C would change. So we're looking at really families of solutions. So if we go back to our original form, which is still here, I think I erased it. The original form I had was AX times U, or let's write it as AU plus B, AU double prime plus BU plus CU. So we're not just solving a single equation where we're changing C by some multiple of a constant function. And we're looking at families of solutions. Perhaps it'll be clear if we look at an example. I'll show you how to use this. Okay. So let's suppose we're given this equation, x times L q double prime plus 1 minus x L q prime plus q times L q is equal to 0. So here L sub q is a function of x. And if we want to solve this differential equation, how can we do that? So first of all, what we want to do is, so here, note that our equation explicitly involves basically the eigenvalue. And so if we want to solve this equation for general q, then what I originally defined as c is going to be changing. So we're solving, you think of it as a class of differential equations. Okay, so we want to put this equation in our Sturm-Liouville form. So this form here with the S's and P's is what I'll refer to as Sturm-Liouville form. Then we need to get rid of this term. And so S is going to be x times some function g of x. So we can get it in that form by multiplying the entire equation by g. If we do that, then so s will be x times some function, and the derivative of s has to be equal to, which from this form is equal to x times g prime plus g, and that has to be equal to this term, 1 minus x times g. Okay. So if g solves this differential equation, then we can put this in Sturm-Liouville form. So this is a very simple equation here. This term cancels this, and the x's then cancel. So we just have g prime is equal to minus g, and so g is equal to e to the minus x. So if we multiply this equation through by e to the minus x, then we can put it in Sturm-Liouville form. And if we do that, it looks like x e to the minus x times L cubed prime plus e to the minus x L cubed. So these two are the same equations. And then we can read off from this solution that our weight is equal to e to the minus x. And so we know that these are orthogonal solutions with respect to this weight. And this, in fact, is one of the weights on our list of three different weights that gives us orthogonal polynomials. And so the solution to this equation is then just given by the generalized Rodriguez formula, some constant e to the x, e dx, the n, x to the n, e to the minus x. Which is the Laguerre polynomials. So you may, So that's how we can tell that the solution to this equation is just the Laguerre polynomials.
So if given any differential equations of this kind, are there any other ways to read off the domain of this?
Right, so we would also need So this is, again, so I didn't mention the boundary conditions here. If we were given this equation, we'd also need to be given the boundary conditions and check that it satisfies this condition, this condition, that the boundaries, this boundary condition is satisfied. So this only follows after we check the boundary conditions. Any other questions?
What is n that has
solution? Sorry, this should be q. Okay. Thank you.
How do we know that the q which is in the definition of LQ is the same as the q which is in the equation? As the prefector of LQ?
How do we know that this q is the same as,
yeah,
as that q? Well, good. Well, I think the simplest way to check that, I guess, would be just to plug this in here and check that we get the Q. back out. I don't know of any simpler way I do that. That's a good point. It turns out in this case it is the right queue, but yeah, in general you would need to check that, and perhaps there's some other relation between this queue and the degree of the polynomial. Yes.
Is there a second solution? I mean, that's a second order equation.
Yes, there is, and you could find that just by the reduction of order that you learned about.